Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The best way to root out government waste and fraud and to improve efficiency is not to run rampant through the bureaucracy like a bull in a china shop. All you end up doing is breaking things, perhaps irrevocably, or making mistakes that you have to fix if you can. But that's exactly what appears to be happening as Donald Trump allows Elon Musk to make decisions about federal agencies, federal programs, federal loans and grants, and federal employees. You might be able to rest easy if this were just happening inside the Beltway, but it's not. There are federal workers being fired in every state in the union. There are federal programs being put on hold or ended just about everywhere. Cuts to programs and the number of federal employees working to execute them could adversely affect recovery efforts in Western North Carolina. The slashing of funding for the Affordable Care Act's Navigator program may make it more difficult for you to find the best insurance that fits your budget, and on and on and on. We will all begin to feel this at some point, and we know that because last year, 43.2% of North Carolina's total revenue came from federal funding. 43.2%, that's over $30 billion. And that doesn't include billions in grants directed at the private sector. Eventually, the economy will begin to feel this. Perhaps it already has. Consumer confidence is the lowest it's been since the beginning of the year. Inflation is rising. And concern about that and possible tariffs is being reflected in the stock market. So today we examine the possible impact of all this with Brian Gorton. He is business and technology reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Thomas Link is president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. And Zach Amitai is Southeast Advocate for E2. That's a nonpartisan group of business leaders, investors, and professionals from various economic sectors who advocate for smart policy that they view as both good for the environment and for the economy. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Good morning, Mike.
So, Brian, let me start with you. Last year, I said 43.2% of the state's revenue came from federal funding. That amounts to $32.6 billion. In a memo issued by the Office of Management and Budget's acting director, the administration would halt, quote, all activities related to obligation or disbursement of all federal financial assistance that could be impacted by Donald Trump's executive orders, singling out foreign aid, non-governmental organizations, diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, woke gender ideology, as they say in a quote, and environmental protections. Does anyone have any idea of how much money this would all amount to?
Quite a lot. And I think that was a blanket freezing on funds that definitely sent shockwave through, especially I'm here in the research triangle. So people are watching these very carefully. Research is in the name of what our area is named after. That blanket pause, I think a reprieve for critics of it, only lasted, I think, a day. And then there it was paused by a judge and then pulled back a bit by the administration. But the more specific funding that I think really has some people nervous because it seems to be being fought more by the administration is cuts to NIH, National Institutes of Health, and cuts to USAID.
It's kind of hard to follow this, and it's kind of hard to follow what's going on with federal employees, which we'll talk about in a moment, because the executive orders have gone out. Elon Musk has made his demands. He sent his emails. And then those things get stopped by courts. And sometimes the pause, as you said, Brian, is only temporary, and things go back with maybe some adjustments here and there. Or they fire people and they have to call them back because suddenly they find out that they are important to the vital operations of the government. Given these suspensions in funding and sometimes cancellations of funding. Do we have any idea how many actual people will be affected by this? Because not all of these people are government employees. Most are not government employees, but they're working because of government grants. Do we have any idea how many people would be impacted?
I don't have a concrete number, but you're right that there are tendrils to this, that if USAID funding, which is currently in legal limbo and not going out overall, that doesn't just mean that USAID employees are impacted. There's the nonprofits that rely quite heavily on USAID in the Triangle. There are a few of the top 10 recipients are based in North Carolina. And so furloughs have already started. They call one nonprofit that's pretty prominent called RTI International, call them temporary layoffs, which is a newer phrase for me because it's, and I talked to the company and they kind of compared it to a furlough, but it also sort of hints that if this money doesn't come back, that it's a layoff. And so I think already, I don't have a concrete overall number of what this could impact, but people say that it could really transform what our area, the Triangle, looks like if all these cuts were to go through.
And Western North Carolina, of course, is in the middle of this recovery from Hurricane Helene. Much of the money is coming from the federal government. Much of the help has been coming from FEMA, which apparently appears to be in trouble. Its existence appears to be in question going forward. What is the status of funding for recovery efforts from the federal government today? Do we know?
I believe that's been much more robust, both at the state and federal level. There seems to be, I know President Trump campaigned in part criticizing the FEMA effort and the Biden recovery effort out in Western North Carolina. That was his first visit. And so I do see those as separate, as there's this focus on, quote, government waste and cutting the budget and the bureaucracy. But I see that as separate from, at least the, in terms of dollars, the relief effort in Western North Carolina. And now obviously the potential cuts to FEMA would perhaps impact the recovery effort as well. But in terms of dollars, I see that at the federal and more recently the state level as flowing.
Since you are a business and technology reporter and you're in the Research Triangle, let's talk about some of these health and science grants that were put on hold. This state is home to research universities and biomedical industries. It's the anchor to the economy, those things in the Research Triangle. In fact, North Carolina is sixth in the nation for NIH funding. Duke University and UNC Chapel Hill are two of NIH's biggest grant recipients. If this money stops or is reduced, what's at stake in terms of money and in terms of research that may be negatively impacted by even a short stoppage of funding?
Yeah, one Duke medical administrator said that he could not overstate how important, specifically the cuts to National Institutes of Health, NIH funding, would be for the Triangle. We're sixth overall in funding, and I think we have the ninth largest population. So we're outsized in research as a state. Duke University is the fifth largest recipient of NIH funds. UNC is 15th. And the change, it's pretty technical, but again, the impact of it would be tremendous if it went through. The Trump administration, every NIH grant has direct funds and indirect funds. And indirect funds are a percentage of the direct funds. And typically, Duke, UNC would get 55-60% added to every grant to cover indirect costs like administrative fees, budget, buildings, staff, infrastructure, the things that don't go directly to a specific project. And the Trump administration's looking to slash that to 15%, so from 60% to 15%, which on a $100 million grant means well over $100,000, and that's just one grant. And if you have 1,000 grants per year, that just adds up to hundreds of millions of dollars annually.
Well, UNC Chapel Hill, Chancellor Holden Thorpe warned of, quote, massive layoffs across the triangle if the National Institutes of Health funding to Duke University and Chapel Hill were cut off. We're talking about, as you said, hundreds of millions in dollars. And earlier this month, North Carolina Attorney General Jeff Jackson joined 21 others, other attorneys general in suing the Trump administration and the NIH for what they called unlawful funding cuts. So two questions. The General Assembly wants to limit Jackson's power to sue over anything imposed by the Trump administration. Would this be one of those suits that they would likely stop or try to stop or they would like to see stopped? And if so, why, given the loss of revenue to the state?
Yeah, I'm not a politics reporter, but I believe that, yes, per the law, it would keep Jeff Jackson from suing decisions that the president made. And so this would be one of them. He was one of 22 attorneys general that sued the NIH over this funding change. And that's currently has a temporary restraining order on it, like many of these policies do. And there was a hearing on it on Friday, and the judge heard arguments from both sides and will now deliberate and make a decision, which might be appealed. And this could be a bit of a process. But for now, the funding changes have not gone through. So there is that reprieve. I'll be curious what you all and our listener think too, because I'm not in the heads of the attorney of the General Assembly members, and I don't cover politics day to day, but I think their argument would be if North Carolina voted for Trump, then the attorney general who represents the state shouldn't be going against the will of the people, is perhaps the argument, valid or not. That's maybe how I would maybe think how they're thinking about it.
Well, according to the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, our state boasts the fourth largest life sciences industry in the country. More than 800 companies are based here, employing around 75,000 people, many of whose jobs are funded through federal research grants. NC Health News reports that our state received more than $4.2 billion research dollars from the NIH over the past 2 years, which would have an $8.5 billion impact on our economy because of the multiplication of dollars as they spread through the economy. And of course, we are not alone. This state is not alone. That is likely true in many, if not all, of the states to a greater or lesser extent. Is this the kind of hit that North Carolina can afford if it wants its economy to remain robust?
No, is my sense. I think that the fabric changing of the triangle and of North Carolina, but the triangle uniquely is what I'm hearing. So if all these cuts were to go through, if the courts uphold what the Trump administration is doing, it would have what school administrators, what Holden Thorpe, a former chancellor of UNC, said, and the Duke medical administrator I spoke to. Yes, they were unequivocal and they did not want to undersell it. They said it couldn't be overselled how important such a drastic cut to funding would have on the state and on jobs and on sort of what makes the triangle in many ways, which it was built around UNC, Duke, and NC State.
It's kind of like a perfect storm combined with an earthquake that creates a tsunami when you're talking about funding cuts to programs and then layoffs that come from that and the layoffs that are coming from the federal government. When we come back, Thomas Link will join us. He's the president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. We'll talk about the impact of what could happen with federal layoffs. And Zach Amitai is with us. He is the Southeast Advocate for E2. They deal with the environment, and that's rolled into this as well. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the impact of federal dollars being cut and federal employees being cut to the economy, to the environment, and more with Brian Gordon. He is a business and technology reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer, stationed in the Research Triangle. Zach Amitai is the Southeast Advocate for E2, which works on environmental issues. And Thomas Link is president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. What's going on with federal employees seems to be on again, off again, and very, very confusing for federal employees, for agencies, for directors of those agencies. But before we talk about that, Thomas, cutting funding to programs around the country will result in layoffs at organizations, both governmental and non-governmental, that receive that funding. But Trump and Elon Musk are also taking a machete to the federal workforce, or they want to. When many people think of federal workers, however, they think, well, it's in Washington, it doesn't concern me. That's not true. How many federal workers are employed outside the Beltway?
Good morning, Mike, and thanks for the opportunity to speak. Most of the federal 90% of all federal employees are outside of Washington, D.C. We have 50 states and universities across all of these 50 states, federal agencies across all of these 50 states. National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association currently has about 300,000 members. These are dues paying members across America. There are, of course, 2 million federal employees across America. Right here, though, in North Carolina, we are one of the largest states when it comes to federal employees. We have 157,261 federal employees and annuitants. That's a lot of votes when it comes to the midterms. We are a nonpartisan organization, but we do provide our members with information about what's important to them in terms of their benefits. We're the only organization in America that actually advocates for federal employees and retirees. I retired from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in Research Triangle Park after 41 years of service. And very invested in what's happening to our federal agencies. In North Carolina, the three largest employers are the Department of Defense, United States Postal Service, and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Of course, we have hundreds of federal agency offices throughout North Carolina, including Food Safety Inspection, Forest Service, NOAA, since we have a big coastal exposure. Again, Fort Bragg, Pope, Seymour Johnson Air Force Base, plus three Marine Corps bases.
So it's hard to put a number on the number of people who have been let go because courts have stopped some of this and some people have been rehired. I think 75,000 people took Trump up on his offer to take early retirement. I read a figure that more than 200,000 federal workers have already been eliminated. I don't know if that is accurate, but have we ever seen anything like this before? Do we have a roadmap someplace in the annals of history that will tell us the impact of getting rid of so many people at the same time?
Well, one example might be in 1980, President Reagan had a similar push to remove federal employees. And at the US EPA, we lost 30% of the world's most respected scientists and researchers in air pollution control, water control, and that sort of thing. So first of all, nobody's been fired yet. This is the big joke. The letters that are coming out are sort of unsigned letters. While you were sleeping last night, and yesterday, and on Saturday, OPM sent out an anonymous letter to federal employees saying that they had until Monday, today at 11:59 p.m. to resign or be fired. First of all, that didn't come from any person. It was an anonymous email. Elon Musk, on Twitter said that if you don't respond to this request, we will consider that a resignation. That's not possible. Federal employees are safeguarded by the Merit Systems Protection Board, the National Labor Relations Board. There is a process in every federal agency.
Well, there is a process and there are legalities surrounding all of this, but it appears that the Trump administration is willing to work outside the law. And some say they are actively attacking the rule of law and may not obey the law and may not obey the courts. So what recourse do you have if it comes to that?
Well, currently our organization, NARF, has four lawsuits against the Trump administration and several of his directors in terms of trying to remove employees. It's illegal. It's in the law. And you're right. This administration is going to try to trample over the law, but we believe that a couple of our lawsuits are going to be settled quickly. Because of the illegality of the lawsuits going on.
Let me play devil's advocate here for a moment, Thomas. I know that you are an advocate for federal workers and retired federal workers and their interests, but could the federal workforce be due or even overdue for a culling? And if so, what would be the best way to go about it?
Well, first of all, statistically, the federal workforce is at the same level it was during John F. Kennedy's presidency. In terms of federal employees, we're not bloated. Federal contracts and money and accounting and that sort of thing for those vehicles could be another story. But we were already working at a less than desirable level of employees for these agencies. And also every agency has an immediate hiring freeze on it. What that means is that the Veterans Administration hospitals, if they lose a doctor or a nurse or any other employee, they cannot be replaced. The same thing with all other federal agencies that's going on. So this is going to reap havoc on the agencies, the people that work there, and their families.
A lot of the people being laid off, in addition to the 75,000 people who have allegedly taken the buyout and retired early, a lot of them are so-called probationary employees, and these are people who are in their first or second year working for the federal government, or people who have been transferred from one branch of the government to another into a new position, and therefore they are on probation for 2 years until they lose the ropes. They want to get rid of all those people. So what would be the impact of that on the ability of the government to function, and by that I mean serve the citizens, if those people were gone?
Well, when I hear people say, so what about federal employees? Yeah, let's get rid of them. They're just lazy nothings. Well, you might not care now, but you will when you don't get your mail, when you don't get your Medicare payments, when you don't get your Social Security payments, when you don't get your IRS tax refund. All of these agencies are operating on current levels of funding and employees, and they're being asked to do the same work or more work with no more people. So people are eventually going to feel this. And by the way, the resignation offer has been rescinded by the White House and OPM. That's no longer in effect. And as you alluded to earlier, many of these things are, they come out one day and then they're gone the next. That's because this administration doesn't really understand the federal government, and many of the agency heads that have been put in have no idea what the federal government does. So we've got a bunch of people now that are coming in that just have no idea what the federal government does.
So if they were able to achieve something even close to what they'd like to do in terms of reducing the size and the number of employees employed by the federal government, what would be the impact to the economy, nationally. And since we have a significant number of federal employees here, also military is being reduced. We have a significant number of military bases here. What would be the impact on our economy of all those people suddenly being without jobs? Could they be absorbed into the private sector?
The answer is no. The people that work at federal agencies, their jobs cannot be performed by the private sector because of security reasons in the United States and because of laws made by Congress. You can't just turn the Department of Defense into a private contractor, although some people might like that. Here in North Carolina, our 157,000 active and retired employees generate $250 million in annuities and salaries every year. That's a lot of money coming into the North Carolina economy. And if that's lost, then that's another big chunk, not to mention the grants and the people that work outside of the government, their jobs being lost, that money comes out of the economy, they go elsewhere, and on and on.
Brian, I know you're not an economist or an economics reporter. You're a business and technology reporter for the News and Observer, but cutting federal employees ultimately would be a big savings to the federal budget. Well, it would be a savings. I'm not sure how big it would be or what the percentage of savings would be in the overall scheme of things. I'm sure it's minuscule, but it would mean fewer workers, less money going out. Would that offset... would that savings offset any negative impact to the economy caused by rising unemployment as a result?
Yeah. So that first thing you mentioned, yeah, I've heard at like different conferences, I remember there was somebody from Wells Fargo had a chart out and just showed that in terms of the macro, like our deficit that is rising as a nation, no, these cuts won't really put a dent or might put a dent, but won't reverse that. Or it's relatively on the whole pie of government spending, this is a smaller amount than maybe you would expect or is being framed. I've seen like floated the idea that the administration could send out direct payment checks to Americans based on these quote unquote savings. And so something like that, there could be an offset benefit, but I think, no, economically, at least, again, I'm in the research triangle, and it seems like this would be just based on our disproportionate high proportion of universities that are NIH recipients and nonprofits that receive U.S. aid funds. This would be changing and negative economically. I could see the administration, part of their argument, not necessarily being economics, but philosophical, that these are programs, even if there is a short-term, long-term pain, that we don't want to be supporting in the way that we have been supporting, ideologically, how taxpayer money, quote-unquote, should be used. And so I think purely economics, I don't see North Carolina really coming out, at least the triangle coming out as strong as it was before, if these changes go through. But perhaps so, pure economics isn't, yeah, the argument
so,
that the administration...
So Zach Amitai is with us. He's the Southeast Advocate for E2. That's a nonpartisan group of business leaders, investors, and professionals from various economic sectors who advocate for what they consider to be smart policy, both good for the environment and good for the economy. Donald Trump, Zach, seems to have it out for anything that would help the environment. It was announced on Friday that the Trump administration is shutting down EV chargers at all federal government buildings, which have recently been installed, and is expected to sell off the General Services Administration's fleet of newly bought electric vehicles. He's also removed regulations and incentives that promote emission-reducing vehicles. He has banned any new offshore wind projects, halted new terrestrial wind turbines, which he calls ugly, and on day one, he withdrew the United States from the Paris Climate Accord. So talk about the various connections between those environmental moves and the economy and about their eventual impact on the environment.
Absolutely, Mike, and thank you so much for having me on. Great to be a part of this discussion. So yeah, you just gave a great summary of some of the actions that the Trump administration has already taken in the environmental space. And this is really just the tip of the iceberg as far as what the Trump administration intends to do as far as rollbacks of environmental protections and clean energy investments. We're already seeing these actions depress the market in the clean energy space and the clean energy deployment space. We're really just at the beginning of the implications of these actions. So, you know, to kind of reflect on what Thomas spoke about, when it comes to reducing the federal workforce, and particularly the folks who are focused on environmental protections, the long-term consequences of that will be the worsening of our environment. That's the worsening of the quality of our water, our beaches, our air, and that's something that all Americans will feel, but certainly disproportionately communities, frontline communities who are closer to pollution sources. So that's to be taken very seriously. And then on the other side, reduction in the workforce of the Department of Energy and other agencies tasked on ensuring that we have a robust energy market here domestically will be felt in the private sector and in the growth or the slowing of the growth of the clean energy economy, which has in the past 5 to 10 years proven itself as really a workhorse and an economic engine.
I'm glad you brought that up, because your organization, E2, reported in October of last year that our state's clean energy workforce added 4,408 new workers in 2023, a growth of 4.2%, and added jobs at a much faster rate than the state's overall employment, which is only 2.5%. And you report that in 2023, clean energy accounted for over 11 times more jobs in North Carolina than fossil fuels. We enjoyed the ninth largest clean energy workforce in the country, 109,788 jobs in total. And in Mecklenburg County, that sector amounts to about 20,000 jobs. Is all of that at risk with these changes in policy?
Great question, Mike, and thank you for sharing those numbers. You know, I'd say a lot of this is market dynamics, and not something that the Trump administration or the Republican-controlled Congress can claw back, you know, with the snap of a finger. So these jobs are out there. These are real jobs across the country, across our state, that will continue to be in place regardless of administrative actions. But certainly, you know, what's threatened here is that growth rate that you discussed. You know, again, the clean energy economy here in North Carolina growing roughly twice as fast as the economy overall.
But Zach, I have 20 seconds. If you eliminate funding, if you eliminate incentives, won't those jobs ultimately go away? Or will you need all those people as they diminish that sector? I have 10 seconds.
We're seeing some jobs cut for sure. Those jobs are threatened. The question is how many might be.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back with more on this topic and federal employees and more in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the economic impact of proposed federal cuts to programs and grants and loan programs around the country, around the state, to the reduction in workforce at the federal level, and the impact on the environment with some of the cutbacks or changes in policy that the Trump administration is trying to get through. We're here with Brian Gordon. He's a business and technology reporter for the News and Observer. Thomas Link is the president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. And Zach Amitai is Southeast Advocate for E2. Zach, E2 has plotted on a map of the United States where the most clean energy projects announced by the private sector are located. 24 are in North Carolina with $2 billion in investments, creating nearly 12,000 jobs. 29 are in South Carolina with over $21 billion in investments and creating more than 14,000 jobs. You also report that the majority of these projects and the jobs that go with them around the country and here certainly are in Republican districts. They lead the number of areas, blue areas, 2-1. In other words, red districts are benefiting the most and will likely be hurt the most should these projects be diminished or go away. Is that likely to create a political problem in the future?
I would say absolutely, Mike. I think it's such an important thing for us to be calling out. And to your point, two out of every three projects are in Republican-controlled districts. 80% of those private sector investments, and nationwide, what we're looking at is $130 billion in investments by companies in these clean energy projects. 80% of that $130 billion is in Republican-controlled districts. So we're already seeing some members of Congress come out speaking in support of the tax credits and other federal programs that are helping to spur this growth in the private sector. But there will be repercussions almost certainly for those communities and hopefully for the representatives who are supposed to advance their interests in Congress should all these projects be impacted by all this uncertainty and chaos being sowed by the Trump administration in the clean energy space.
And as I said at the very beginning of our conversation, that Donald Trump seems to have it out for anything that would help the environment. And that includes, and this is ironic given the fact that Elon Musk is involved in this, but anything involving a move away from fossil fuels toward cleaner energy. Is there any, Zach, any reasonable person, any knowledgeable person, any educated person who would argue that electric vehicles are the future and that clean energy, renewable energy, is the future? And if that is the case, if you ignore it, what's at stake?
Yeah. Well, Mike, I think just looking at the facts alone speak for themselves. You know, 90% of new energy generation built in the U.S. last year were renewables. Electric vehicles, the market for those is growing like gangbusters years over year, you know, despite some headlines to the contrary. So we're really just seeing the market is clearly demonstrating here that, you know, renewables and electric vehicles aren't only the future, they are also already the present. And really it's a question of what role does the United States want to play in the manufacturing of these industries that are establishing themselves as the future of the economy and particularly the energy economy. You know, the slower the United States invests in manufacturing and all these different technologies, the more we drag our feet or backtrack, the more of an established leadership role other countries will be able to cement. And that includes China and countries that might not necessarily be American allies. So there's a real, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say that comment, that trend is something that is replicating itself throughout a lot of these initiatives that he would like to see happen. Brian, many of Donald Trump's initiatives appear to be at odds with other of his initiatives. In other words, doing one thing successfully might hurt what he's trying to do in another area. For instance, the New York Times reports that the bright spot in the revival of American manufacturing has been driven by the policies President Biden put into place and that offer incentives for construction of things like semiconductor plants and factories that would increase the production of equipment needed for renewable energy deployment. Trump campaigned on dismantling what he called the Green New Scam and is trying to roll back support for low-carbon energy, including battery-powered vehicles, wind and solar power. So those reversals, among others, could derail the factory boom, which is something he wants to do. He wants to bring American manufacturing back. How might this affect our state?
Yeah, North Carolina, especially under Governor Cooper, really prioritized, quote, green energy jobs related to the renewable energy economy. What comes to mind is a giant semiconductor plant in near Siler City from the Durham company Wolfspeed, which makes semiconductors that go into, amongst other things, electric vehicles. Toyota announced a major and is just opening in a month or two, its giant EV and hybrid battery plant near Greensboro. And so, yeah, I think a lot of the deluge of news and cuts have been around research. But yes, the green economy, I think, remains to be seen exactly what will happen with some of the reversals or potential reversals of the Biden administration. But it is a fact that North Carolina economic officials say when companies in the past 4 years looked at North Carolina and then announced major job commitments, that they cited things like the Inflation Reduction Act as helping bring at least announced green jobs to North Carolina. And
Zach,
so
Zach wanted to get in on this question. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike. And really just playing off of what Brian was already saying. Brian, thank you for flagging those two projects in particular, you know, Wolf Speed and Siler City, a $5 billion investment expected to create 1,800 jobs. The Toyota EV battery manufacturing plant in Liberty expected to create 3,000 jobs, $12 billion investment. And that's just two of the 24 projects across the state, many of which are in the Charlotte area as well, whether it's Adam Power and Alpitronic building EV chargers, Siemens building large power transformers, Albemarle processing lithium and doing a battery R&D. So there's just enormous economic activity that's being driven here in the state, across the state. And a lot of this is predicated on business certainty, being able to see the market into the future. And part of the beauty of the policies passed by the Biden administration was a 10-year clean energy tax credit package. So these companies knew a decade out what this market was going to look like and made investments based on that. And now that's all being potentially clawed back, and they're in this enormous period of uncertainty where it's really impossible for businesses to plan for the longer term and make investments appropriately.
So Brian, when you lump all of these things together, cutbacks, cancellations of funding to various research and development projects, mass firings of federal workers, a cut in Pentagon spending, which has implications in all 50 states by design, a shift away from incentives for cleaner technology, cleaner energy, and the uncertainty that all of this causes in the business world and in the markets, it seems that the economy, if all of this happens to some degree, could take a major hit. And in fact, one economist has already said, he's already warned of a major recession. What are you hearing business leaders in the Triangle say about this?
Yeah, I think Zach made a good point about certainty, that businesses thrive on certainty, and just the whiplash of Biden administration going really hard one way in terms of green renewal jobs, and now this new administration that, especially, there's a lot of wait and see on how much, if any, will change from that. I think you still hear college administrators who I spoke to, the cuts were announced, were made, they're now being blocked, but those feel really real and they responded in a really urgent way. I think business leaders are still a bit in wait and see mode. They like to, with public statements, be cautious and not be too extreme until probably the moment demands them to. So I think they're a little still in wait and see mood, but they reference the benefits of some past policies in their job announcements while not outright criticizing the current administration. Yeah.
I want to get back to federal employees. Thomas Link is the president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. Your organization recently issued a list of emerging threats to many aspects of federal employment, including threats to earned federal benefits for those employees and former employees. They were retirement and health benefits that include reductions or eliminations in cost of living adjustments, to federal annuities, I guess that's retirement, or retirement funding, reducing the rate of return on the thrift savings plan available to federal employees, limiting government contributions toward health benefits, and forcing employees and retirees to pay significantly more out of pocket. All of these things were, quote, under consideration. How many have been announced?
Actually, none have been formally announced yet. As a federal employee myself, I can tell you that 12% of every one of my paychecks came out to go towards my retirement, towards Medicare, towards health benefits. So I paid for my benefits. And this is a promise that the U.S. government must keep. And when people who depend upon their retirements and their Medicare and their Social Security aren't getting those benefits that they paid into, there will be an uproar like you've never heard. People are not going to, when it comes to money, federal employees are not going to lay down and take it. The main message that our organization is trying to get out to our members and to and our 2 million federal employees across America is don't get into a knee-jerk reaction. Don't jump at the first thing that comes along fearing that, you know, you'll be fired and won't get anything. All of this stuff, none of this stuff has gone into effect. No federal jobs have been lost yet. I mean, the only thing that's happened to federal employees is they've been put on administrative leave in the AID agency. What this means is they're still getting their paychecks. And until they actually are forced to resign, which that is against the law, you know, nobody can force a federal employee to resign. So a lot of this is going to play out in the courts. It's going to be long. It's going to be messy. And as we're seeing now in red districts, people are coming to their representatives and screaming at them, why are you doing this to us? This is not what we voted for. We didn't vote for $8 for a dozen eggs. We thought that was going to be fixed. So the outcry is coming.
Let me relay a question to you, Thomas, from one of our listeners who, from the tone of the email, I would say he or she is a federal employee or past employee. They want to ask you to comment on the impact of the accusatory letter that terminated federal employees and what impact that might have on their getting a new job. Innuendos of fraud and or poor performance do not provide, they say, a positive recommendation. What will they be eligible to receive in unemployment funds from the state? Who funds unemployment insurance? Those are three questions in there, and we have very short on time.
Right. Well, first of all, I would encourage those employees to go to their first-line supervisor and ask them about any letters they're receiving that impact their service or their performance. Only federal supervisors can rate a federal employee on performance by law. So that's the first thing I would say. I would say to sort of sit tight, you know, don't let fear overrule what's in place now. As I mentioned before, many of the new agency heads have no idea how to run a federal agency. They didn't come from that background. They are learning as they go. And as we see more and more pushback, you know, from constituents to their representatives, I think we're going to see some more. I think we're going to see some more people in the Senate and in the House of Representatives pushing back. That is my prayer.
It took years, Brian, very quickly, for Republican leaders in our General Assembly to get on board with the expansion of Medicaid. They wanted guarantees that the federal government would continue to cover 90% of the expense of that expansion, which has allowed 600,000 people to have access to health care coverage. What has Donald Trump said about his plans to continue funding at Medicaid? Because I know he wants to tinker with the Affordable Care Act.
I think that the specifics, that's not something I've been tracking. I know
We need an economist on this program.
It took a long time. We just got it done within the last year. And like many federal projects, there is this fear surrounding it.
When all there are also cuts to schools we haven't talked about. There are cuts planned to school. It's already happened at CMS. I think they lost three grants totaling over $5 million. The same thing has happened in Gaston County. When all is said and done, I'm not sure who to ask this question of. If all or most of these cuts in funds and grants and personnel are allowed to stand, how much money will we have saved? And how does that compare to either the national debt or even the lost revenue from the tax cuts that Trump wants to enact? Does anybody know the answer?
Well, in the federal government, it's a drop in the bucket. If you got rid of every federal employee, 2 million federal employees, it would be, you know, maybe I think I've seen a 1.5% reduction in the nation's budget.
Thomas Link is president of the North Carolina Active and Retired Federal Employee Association. He joined us along with Zach Amati, Southeast Advocate for E2, which deals with business and environment and the environment, and Brian Gordon, Business and Tech Reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.